Welcome to Counterpressed on The Ringer and Spotify. I'm in the studio with Jessie Park Humphreys and Becky Taylor Gill. Jessie, back from your Dutch adventure. How was it?
Yeah, it was great fun. It was definitely the best like Champions League away day that I've ever done. I think you really felt like Chelsea fans really showed up. The Dutch Chelsea supporters group.
Wow.
They were great.
Fun.
They brought the noise. We were in a bar outside the ground before the game and they were all singing Chelsea songs and the owner of the bar just like turned the music up really, really loud to drown them out. But yeah, great
trip. Can you give me a sense of what a Chelsea song might sound like in a Dutch accent?
Absolutely not.
I'm really like intrigued.
Dutch people speak just perfect English anyway, so it's like,
yeah,
it's
Dutch
not
is
even
such
that.
A funny language.
Also, it was so weird just being in Amsterdam. I've never been before.
Had you not?
No, and it's just like England. Well, not like England, but like because everyone speaks English.
Yeah.
Like even when you're walking down the street, half the people walking down the street are also still speaking English. Like not even just in. So that was kind of funny.
Did you partake in any?
No, I didn't. No, I just stuck to the beers.
You do love your beers.
I just love beer. I went to the Van Gogh Museum. Got my little Playmobil.
Did you see my almond blossoms?
Yeah, I did see that.
I love the almond blossoms.
They had little knitted Miffies as well. Have you seen those?
I love a museum shop. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, obviously I got my Playmobil. And yeah, the game was good as well and we won, so no complaints, really. 10 out of 10, would go to Amsterdam again.
Wow.
Can I ask, what was the turnout from the Chelsea Dutch supporters group? Like, what would you say the numbers makeup of Chelsea fans was like, group-wise? Was it like 3,000, 10,000?
10,000 Chelsea fans?
I don't know. I'm just
so
thinking
the location was 600.
What? You only got 600?
That's quite a lot by Champions League standards. For the semi-final at Camp Nou last year, we got 150. Yeah.
I do remember that drama, actually, because loads of people bought home fan tickets in the end.
And the away end was pretty busy.
10,000
Chelsea fans. We barely get out to Stamford Bridge, let alone bloody Johan Cruyff.
I just thought, well, you really bigged up the Chelsea Dutch supports. I was like, okay, they really turned out.
That was like a group of like 30 of them.
Damn, I really was sold a dream there. Also, the stadium was big and it sounded loud. So that's why I thought maybe that there'd been a bigger group that had taken up that section. I don't know, but
Arsenal fans have got to you.
Yeah.
600? Wow.
I will only be taking credit, obviously, for setting
for
the 30,000,
yeah, as you should.
The biggest turnout for a women's game in the Netherlands
Which
ever.
Which is crazy because they hosted the final last year.
I was also talking to my Dutch friend about this and she says like all the national team games just get put in like small stadiums all the time.
And then,
obviously the Eindhoven ground isn't as big as like the Johan Cruyff. But yeah, I was like, wow, here for the Chelsea. You're only here for the Chelsea.
Yeah, because when they had the Euros, they were all in pretty small grounds and they did so well and it sold
forgot about the Euros. Yeah. That's crazy that none of them got over, what was it, 35?
Yeah, I think it was 35,000.
And good atmosphere in there. It sounded loud on
the
coverage.
Really good. It was really good vibes.
That's why I thought there were 10,000 Chelsea fans too. I was like, wow, these guys are loud. I thought
that was just the Dutch supporters group going over.
Yeah, clearly. Damn, I really got overexcited.
10,000, that's so funny.
Well, you know me and my numbers. Never
You're dressed
reliable.
Quite pro-Dutch today, aren't
in my
you? You've
orange.
Got a nice orange jumper on.
I just tried to, you know, really get bring it home to you when you came back. Yeah.
No culture shock for Jessie on the way.
And you dressed up as a French person because I went through France. Oh,
yeah, exactly.
You must have only been there for about...
I'm wearing stripes, by the way.
Yeah. Were you there? She's got a baguette with her.
You were there for about, what, 36 hours or something? No, not even.
Well, I got there at... Yeah, I was there for about 30 hours. So, nice, brief trip.
Love it.
Well, I've had a similarly exciting week, everyone. I went for an eye test. I'm long-sighted.
Oh,
you get glasses. I think I need
glasses.
Tests.
Yeah.
Well, so I haven't been to the optician since I was about 8 years old.
I've never had an eye test.
Your whole life?
I'm 28 years old. I've never had an eye test.
I was doing badly.
Yeah, no, don't worry.
Wow. Guys, I've ever told you about how when I was younger, when I was about 4, I had to wear an eye patch because I was cross-eyed. I had a lazy eye.
That's so
it's very
funny.
Hannah Hampton coded, but I had a lazy eye, so I had to wear an eye patch so that the
other one comes in.
Yeah, so Hannah Hampton and I have been on similar journeys. attorneys with our eyesight.
Why are you not a pro goalie?
Maybe there's still time.
I always, those kids who had to have, who wear like plasters over their eyes just made me laugh so much.
I was one of those kids.
Wow.
So I had glasses very young, and then that's why I haven't really had an eye test since then. But I do think I desperately need one because I'm trying to struggle at nighttime driving. I'm getting a little bit.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's not
getting
ideal.
In a car with flow at nighttime. Yeah, exactly. I'm a very good driver.
I can't like look at a screen that's close to me now.
Okay,
like,
you definitely need glasses.
And, well, I can. It's
and
a really
very
weird
old person.
Yes, exactly. It's like my eyes are just tired. But then also, I call my mum to be like, I'm having an eye test because when I'm like looking at my computer, it's like a bit more of a struggle these days. And she was like, oh, by the way, I've got this eye thing that's like 50%. If your parent has it, you're like 50%, you're going to have it. So they might just be fucked up, guys.
Well, good time to tell you now. Under wraps.
Yeah.
Well, I think for me, it's the car lights at night. Yeah. I'm sometimes a bit. Anyway.
What glasses do you think are going to look good for my face? Maybe I need to put this out on Twitter. Like,
yeah, do
any,
some
like,
options.
Face shape experts.
Can you go into Specsavers and do some options and then we'll vote and do like a poll on which one
also,
we think's
on
best.
The internet, on like some of the really posh glasses shop, you can do it where you upload a photo and then they put you on. Yeah. That's a really fun game to play.
But I don't know if, I just don't know if that's going to give me like an authentic. I think I need to go into the shop and try on loads, but...
Just don't do what Zana did, which is go into the shop, try on loads, and leave with some insanely expensive glasses on an absolutely crazy credit plan, which she only really realised, I think, when she told me how much she'd spent, and I was like, what on earth?
Oh, no.
So don't get tricked.
Listener, hit us up with your glasses stories. I feel like there's going to be some good ones out there. Anyway, Champions League to talk about, guys, because we had the first legs in the quarterfinals. Very exciting. Also been the Olympic draw, so we're going to touch on that. And some news on a fun new Liga MX NWSL tournament. So let's get into it after this. Start with Ajax-Chelsea. Jesse's a little away day with the Dutch Chelsea Ultras, who took over Amsterdam, as we just heard.
Anywhere in Amsterdam without seeing a Chelsea fan.
Millions of them.
I did enjoy, actually, on that. We went to a cute little bar beforehand, and I was wearing the shirt I'm actually wearing now because I didn't plan on staying in London, so I ran out of clothes.
Stinky McGee.
A Sam Kerr shirt. And then the guy was making, a guy just sat in the bar, was like having a laugh with me, pretending like I was Sam Kerr. Love that I'd be wearing my own shirt out and about. And that he was like, I'd come for some beers because I couldn't play tonight. And I was like, wow, the people of Amsterdam like knew what they were talking about.
You know what I actually really loved about the World Cup, which I felt like was really different from the Euros. The Euros was really special, but like the World Cup was just like being in the airport in Australia and like seeing someone else like with an England hat or like in an English shirt. It's like really special.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
I heard someone on the Eurostar say Emma Hayes' name and I was like, oh, trust fans on the Eurostar.
Chelsea ended up getting a 3-0 lead in the first leg for this, and it could have been a lot more. Goals galore, some good VAR decisions in the end and some that maybe took longer than they should have and I think maybe should have just been called by the lino then and there, but I guess that's what VAR is sort of for. But it was pretty comfortable and some really good performances and shockingly, Emma Hayes played the same starting lineup for once from Friday night to Tuesday night. That was a big surprise, I guess, in some
ways. She's lost the power in the dressing room. They were like, we're picking the team now, bitch.
And we're keeping the same one. It's crazy.
Jess Carter took over.
I think last night was like our 28th game of the season. And we've had changes between each.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's bonkers. But I mean, after the Arsenal performance, why would you change the team? And to be honest, given the players we've got available, there aren't a huge number of options to switch up anyway. I thought Ajax started really well. Obviously, Romy Lukter hits the post early on. And I think you could see why teams had struggled with them in transition. Thought Lily Johannes was really good, turning the ball over well in the midfield. But I think the problem was that ultimately Chelsea's kind of quality in those situations also just came through. And Johanna's got a yellow card quite early on. I think that kind of limited her effectiveness then as a result. And from there, it did kind of feel like, I personally felt like Chelsea didn't really need to push that hard to score the goals they scored. And I think case in point was obviously there's the second goal that Guru scores that gets disallowed. And Chelsea basically just immediately go, oh, fuck you, we'll score another one. And I think that just sort of showed like how if they wanted to turn the dial up and score, they could. And yeah, I felt like 3-0 was probably a fair result.
They look very smooth and very comfortable. And I actually think probably the most free and relaxed in attack, in and around the box, we've seen in a while from them, because there has been moments where they've kind of struggled through games or relied on like Lauren James to pull something out this season or an individual player to do something, Sushka Nuskin becoming that kind of go-to. She obviously had a really good game in this, but it was probably frustrating for Ajax, the way that the goals and even the disallowed goals kept coming from the same sort of movement and positioning around the box, was, which is something Chelsea do really well. But I think some teams have become more accustomed to defending that than others. And that's why it's become more difficult for Chelsea over the past couple of seasons. But the way that they are so good at taking it out wide, cutting it back to the edge of the box and finishing, which we saw so many of those chances on Tuesday night. And they did that with ease and just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And I think Ajax found it really hard to adapt, to work out how do we kind of keep them out of those areas and not give them those chances. And it's hard when you're dealing with a team where they have so many different goal scorers. Like when your defensive midfielder, who's obviously played everywhere, is got such a good finish right now, it's really hard. And Lauren James, another brilliant game from her. But I did think it was like, I felt like the problem solving from Ajax maybe wasn't there.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair to Ajax in that sense, they were obviously without Sherida Spitzer. They're already an incredibly young
team. The Dutch Chili Flatty, as we all
the
know.
The Dutch Chili Flatty.
The Dutch Chili Flatty.
And if you're without Chili Flatty in your team, like, it's hard to find the levels. But I think maybe that like bit of experience would have helped them in that sense. But yeah, I think what's interesting from a Chelsea perspective in some ways is it feels like they've cycled through so many different attacking possibilities since Kerr got injured. And now it feels like they've landed on this LJ Nuskin duo up top. Nuskin's movement to get into positions to score goals has been fantastic. We've seen that from her on and off throughout the season. Feels like it really frees LJ up. She doesn't have the pressure of having to lead the line because Nuskin sort of steps up and does that. But then you're like, well, when Mayra Ramirez comes back, how do you want to...
It's like, we don't need you anymore, Mayra.
It's okay. I think obviously you'd still want Mayra, but I do think... Because I think also there's probably an element of like teams not cottoning onto it. Whereas I think what Nuskin's doing is very similar to what Ramirez will do. But there's also the benefit of the fact that Ramirez has been in the team since January and Nuskin's been in the team since August. So she just has more familiarity, obviously, with the other players around her. But I think it's just also testament to sort of Chelsea's problem solving. And when we're talking about the fact they've rotated so much, I think this is the bit of the season where the benefits of that really come through, because it's like whoever you bring into the team, they're ready to go. And maybe Chelsea at earlier points in the season don't look as good because they prioritise gaining that familiarity from players using that rotation. So of course at points it's going to be a bit like meh, 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 as everyone like tries to figure it out. But then you get to March and everyone's sort of really dialed in on what they're expected to do.
Yeah, definitely. It felt like a big match for Lily Yohannes. A lot of US viewers, you know, have been watching her development with a keen eye, playing in front of Emma Hayes. She was asked about it afterwards. What else is Emma Gunnar Hayes say apart from being obviously
Emma Gunnar Hayes?
Is Gunnar Hayes. Like, she's always going to do that.
Thing you know about Emma, she is going to Hayes.
That Emma Gunnar Hayes. But she's obviously going to be complimentary. You don't, that's the standard. She is a very exciting player. She had a really good game. The yellow card, like you said, sort of obviously held her back a little bit. But what did you make of her performance overall? Because it felt like quite a high-pressurised game because of it's in front of the incoming US women's national team coach. And the narrative was really narrativing, I think, on the night.
I feel like, though, Americans are trying to narrative her into choosing to play for the US.
Which she's made a choice.
Of course she will. They do it all the time.
It's like, oh yeah, she's playing in front of Emma Hayes. It's like, well,
she might not care.
Exactly.
It's not like
she might be like, where's Andreas Jonker?
It's not like it's between the US and like some crap tiny country. Like the Netherlands have like, you know, women's football pedigree. She has a choice to make.
Yeah. Anyway, I did think she was really good. I think she's been impressive throughout the Champions League, and I think she's clearly very, very talented. And I think it's something Ajax do very well in that they trust young players and they give them the opportunities to play. The only thing I will say is I think it was really interesting. I interviewed Daphne Costa, who's the head of women's football, during the group stages when Ajax were like on the cusp of qualifying, and we talked about Johannes, and she kind of said, like, yeah, she's amazing, but like she's 16, she's going to have ups and downs. And I think as exciting as she is, and I think she did really, really well in a game that was obviously very tough and she had some really bright moments, even though I think as the game went on, she kind of faded away. And unfortunately now she'll miss the second leg. I think that's important as well. Like 16-year-olds are always going to have ups and downs. And I do think the nature of some of the American conversation around her, which is like, only Lily Johannes can save the American midfield. I'm like, guys, if that's what you're pinning everything on, as talented as she is, I think you've got bigger problems than
Also,
than
it's
that.
Probably unfair as well to some of the talent they do have with much more experience, who some of them are playing in Europe, but also some of them are playing in NWSL. It's like, also, you're overlooking that.
They love to have like a young star, though, don't they, who's going to save them.
Well, Kat Macario was that a few years ago.
Well, yeah, and then obviously, like, there's been lots of sort of Macario jokes as well. Well, not jokes, but like Emma was saying that Macario was like joking with her about being picked for the Olympics because she had to fill out a form to be, I guess you have to say, like, I'm available to be picked for the Olympics before you can get picked or something.
It is a bit weird and conflict of interesty, I think, that when you are managing players that are going to be in your national team squad. I don't know.
I think it's fine if you're Kat Macario, because I'm like, well, Kat Macario.
You'll probably get picked anyway, but I would probably feel some type of way if I was a US player, not in the Chelsea camp and maybe in a bit more of a bubble team player. Mia Fischl's injured, right? So she's out of the conversation. But if Mia Fischl maybe made the squad and I was a player, a forward who hadn't made the squad, I would be like, interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it? Manager's always her favourite. So.
Anyway, Khadija Buchanan. Another good game for her off the back of that Friday night performance. And it is really important for her because she's not had the best performances at Chelsea since she came in. I think adjustment to the league is a big part of that. But the last two games, she's kind of taken on a role which has suited her in that probably not given a ton of the ball because we know that she likes to get pressed and can get uncomfortable, but has been tasked with kind of almost like managing individual players in a game and trying to keep them out of moments. And it's kind of the perfect situation for her, and she's been doing it really well in those two games.
Yeah, she's had two great games. The Cruyff turn at the Cruyff Arena is so much fun in the lead up to the second goal. Yeah, Hayes said after the match, like, it's kind of so it's Emma gonna Hayes, but so brutal in terms of being like, oh, when she joined Chelsea, she said she wanted to be the best defender in the world. And I think we all know she's not lived up to that. Like,
oh, she said
along
that.
Those lines. I'm paraphrasing, but the implication was that she's not been very good.
Well, she would probably admit that herself, to be fair.
Well, exactly.
Still, though, you don't want your manager to come out and be like,
when you've just had two really good games.
Sometimes you've got to take the L, guys.
Emma gonna Hayes, that's what I'm saying. But
wow, that's just really immediately gone into counterpress lexicon,
hasn't
it?
Yeah, I know. I need a t-shirt.
Boiled Noggins and Emma Gunna Hayes. We've done it all, guys.
I think it's a really interesting moment for her. I do think Buchanan's always a player who I've been like, less so about under Hayes, but I've always been like, she's surely somebody who looks at the new coach coming in and probably is hoping it's not Bonpastor because she didn't always really like her at Lyon. But as an opportunity to sort of reassert herself and as one of those players who you feel like maybe if the style of play changes, maybe, you know, when players get reassessed, you get a new opportunity there. My feeling with Buchanan has always been that the way Emma Hayes's teams play, I think it asks a lot of all of your defenders 1v1. And I think she struggled with that. I agree she looked really good in those games. And it would be interesting to see. Again, it's very useful for Chelsea to have her like on form, especially with Bjorn still out. Maybe though as well, she's someone who we're talking about the benefits of rotation, but she is someone who needs to play regularly to feel settled and confident. And I think that is, it's a different task for players, right? Mentally, to be like, you're in one week, you're out the next, you know, can you come in as soon as you're called on and like go for it? And I think it's really interesting that she just came off playing a ton of games at the Gold Cup. Then she's put back into the Chelsea team and she looks really good. What happens if she drops out of the Chelsea team again for a couple of weeks and then comes back in? Like, can she sustain that level? Because I think that's the expectation of what you have to do at Chelsea with the way they do rotate.
It's also interesting, sorry, I don't want to go back to Friday night, but that Emily Fox didn't start, and maybe it would have been because it was almost like she needed rest post-Gold Cup, but actually Arsenal kind of suffered a lot by not doing
although
the same
Fox
sort of thing.
Obviously came back later than
because she,
the Canadians.
You know, was in the final, but... Want to talk about the Benfica-Lyon game, which I know is a fave of yours, Becky. But having watched that game and Bon Pastore on the sidelines for Lyon, it made me finally remember what's happened to the Chelsea manager conversation. It was like the there was so much going on with shortlists and Harvey and Stoney signing a new contract and who's it going to be? You know, the sort of fake news around it having to be a women coach. And then Bon Pastore looked like the favourite, and then it's just gone quiet for about 2 months.
Which is that scary? Have they done it?
Have they not? It's so confusing. So Jesse, like, is there any update on that? Because
Not as far as I'm aware. And it is interesting because my feeling always was that they needed to, if they were going to announce before the end of the season, which you think they might do. That they needed to do it before we kind of got to this point of the season, because I think that becomes a distraction. I think they needed it to be sort of like when the original Bon Pastore links came out, the last international break. That, for me, that always felt like that's a logical time. You can announce a manager, it's in an international break, so there's not a focus on. I mean, I guess we are about to get to an international break, potentially, like they do still do it then. The other thing I guess that's interesting is, if it is Bon Pastore, has that complicated how you announce it? Because there's a world where Chelsea play Lyon in the Champions League final. But I don't understand how, if it is Bon Pastore, you're still going to have to do something about it, because surely they can't wait until
after
May.
That. Well, because, that is what's awkward.
Yeah, because also these players like need to know
for their future.
Might have told the players.
Yeah, but then if they've told the players, like, what difference
does it make?
That would come out.
Well, that's what I think is sort of awkward, because the Emma Hayes stuff came early enough, almost, or sort of accidentally, because US soccer's hand was forced a bit. But it almost came out early enough in the season that everyone kind of move on, and it now becomes about the incoming one. But if the incoming one is going to be a
Jessie
team that's
moved
going...
on, it's like that Taylor Swift song. Like, what is it?
All Too Well. 10-minute version.
She's still in the restaurant.
What? What restaurant?
Swifties, you know what I mean.
But now it is all good because you've got two teams going deep into the competition, and it could really impact Lyon, and maybe that's why it's sort of gone quiet, because they want to almost wait till they're knocked out of the competition or
Can Benfica do it?
Let's talk about it, because you know, everyone knows I love my Benfica girlies, and I knew they were going to get chances, and the good thing is they took a very good chance. They took that chance, but there were a few others that I was like, guys, you had the chance to give yourself probably a bit of a bigger lead to try and defend. And even though Lyon really didn't play very well, I felt like they were just stodgy and cluttered in and around the box, and the movement, and where we look
cluttered.
At how cluttered.
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 Cluttered. Sorry.
I was like, cluttered.
Sorry,
we were just making up words.
Bloody My Fair Lady. I felt when we look at how sort of clean and the movement was for Chelsea, I felt like Lyon were the opposite. Everything sort of started to break down in and around the box. But because they had so much of the ball, those better chances were going to come, and then it's so hard to defend. And it's frustrating for Benfica, and now they've got to go away to a probably quite empty Groupama Stadium and get something from it. But they did well, those Benfica girlies.
They did well. Also, the Benfica keeper pulled off some like big saves, and it could have been so much worse. But yeah, it is tough to then go away and try and take that lead. Because I think going ahead in the beginning, I think that's what's different about like all those other 2-1s is that Benfica were the only ones that actually like went ahead and had something to protect. yeah, it's going to be tough. But it was fun. And maybe that, you know, 2-1 isn't a crazy scoreline that they're like, it's over, we can't do this. So you just get one back and then it's like, what happens?
Well, what's annoying is they get that first goal and then Davidson has a chance a few minutes later, which is very similar with Leon losing the ball in a dangerous area. But her shot was so tame and you're like, okay, that was the moment. You get a 2-goal lead in that and that makes things that much harder. But when Leon got one, it's like, okay, it felt like the floodgates open. They had one that was disallowed as well. Though they end up kind of taking the lead within the space of about 15 minutes and you're like, oh, that mountain to climb. But I think what this may be wider reflections, Jesse, when it comes to the uber talent that Leon have, I still feel like we haven't seen the best of them yet in this competition. And does that mean the best is yet to come? And, you know, or is it mean that this is actually their baseline now?
I just don't think Leon are a great team. I think they've got very talented players. And I think in lots of elements of the Champions League, having really talented players at this kind of stage is often more than enough. But I do find them just very, like you were saying, stodgy to watch. But I think they'll probably will have enough to go through against Benfica, as I say, because I think I've been thinking a lot about like the quality, in inverted commas, of these quarterfinal ties versus last year's. And I kind of landed on the fact that, like, I think part of the reason why people were more excited for last year's is obviously because it was bigger names. But I think also as a result of it being bigger names, you feel like all of those teams have the couple of players who can make a difference, even if the team doesn't play well. Whereas I think lots of the teams this year, the second place teams, they've got talented players and lots of them are very good sides, but they don't necessarily have that upper echelon then of players who can create maybe something out of nothing if you're really under the cosh. And I think for a team like Leon, it's just easier to rely on having like a couple of talented players to do something for you.
Yeah, and on that, we talking about the quarterfinals last week, and I think the general consensus among fans was that these ties were going to be a lot more top heavy than they actually were.
What I think is really funny is I think that we look at those quarterfinals before they happened, the first leg, and you think Ajax Chelsea is the most competitive of those, and then that's the one that's like one team gets blown out of the water.
So in conclusion, Chelsea are the best
Chelsea
team
are going to win the Champions,
the Champions
League.
League.
Yeah, that's my professional opinion.
Yeah, but I do think also, again, it's a really hard thing to balance because you get it in the Men's Champions League, don't you? Yeah, like the names. People are interested in the names, but there's a reason why we didn't want a European Super League, for example, because it's like, it's not just about that. And I do think this has been an interesting example in the fact that, leaving Ajax Chelsea aside, all of those other teams, they all scored. They only like lost by a 1-goal margin. Clearly, the balance is closer than I think most people expected. Now, maybe when we go to the home legs, those teams will find it harder. But last year, the four teams who reached the semi-finals were the four teams who topped the groups. And I think this year, probably the same thing will happen. Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, the other thing that I kind of find funny about it is like, you look at, say, Arsenal from recently, and I don't know, if Arsenal had ended up playing Barcelona, do I think they would have done significantly better than Bran? Not really.
Well, I think it's really hard.
I don't know. Is that crazy?
But I think
to say?
It's really hard for the teams that didn't top the group across two legs. If it was straight knockout, I do think we would see some more surprises. But I think across two legs, with all of these weaker sides having to play at home first, it's really, really hard to then like try and overturn those ties. Even though we're like, it's almost like a, good for trying, guys. You gave us some drama. We're really proud of you. But it's almost like they're being, well, not set up to fail, because the ranking is the ranking. You top your group, you get the advantage.
Yes.
It makes sense. But it doesn't feel like there's the most even playing field to try and pull up those surprises. And the gap is obviously so big across Europe in the level of competition, the depth, the money,
but
everything.
I think that's what I find interesting. I'm like, is the gap that much bigger?
But
surely what we've seen from this Champions League is that you can be a team like Arsenal or Wolfsburg and then not make even the group stages. You can be a team like Bayern Munich or Roma and not even make it out of your group.
But yeah, but the gap is the teams that have those individual talented players that can pull something out of nothing. So that's the gap. The players that have the bigger squads, the elite level international players, that is the gap that I'm talking about. Whereas Benfica or Bran or Hecken, they just don't have as many of those players. So
but
those
I guess what
bigger
I'm saying
sides
is
always almost
like,
going to muddle their way through.
But I feel like that only applies to like literally sort of the top 3/4 teams in Europe. But even that's then changed. Because I'm like, if you are in a position where like, I think it shows how quickly maybe stuff like that can change. And I think having the individual players adds to the excitement, but doesn't necessarily add to the ability. Like, that's what I mean about individual players. Not that they always bail teams out, but I think you feel more excited about watching games where they've got more bigger name players. And that's what, say, last year's quarterfinals offered, rather than per se just that the team, like that they were necessarily more evenly matched, because the first leg results suggest that it almost is as about as
also
evenly
like
matched.
Arsenal and Wolfsburg have those kinds of players and didn't make it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think having a good team can obviously get you further, clearly, or at least this year it has enabled you to get you further. But I think people feel less excited about that because if you ask most people, they can't name you a Brand player, whereas everyone can name you a Wolfsburg player. But it doesn't actually mean that Wolfsburg are better than Brand.
I also think what's difficult, and like I would love Brand or Hecken or Benfica to pull out a win. That would be so exciting. But then that does just extend that feeling of like,
right, you then get to the semi-final and you're like, okay, well, if Brand somehow beat Barcelona,
you're like, try and do it again, guys,
please.
That's the only one I'm like, that would be great for Chelsea, so I'd be happy about it when it comes to the semi-final. But like,
for me, the best one I think would be if Benfica beat Lyon, because I do think if Benfica could beat Lyon, they could beat PSG.
Yes.
So I think that Benfica PSG would be a fun semi-final.
Oh my god, Benfica final, in the final in Bilbao, I will be there. That would be so good. And their fans, they were loud in that game. Like,
I just want to say about the Brand fans, actually.
The Brand fans, best fans
love
of the competition.
Them.
What about the 10,000 Chelsea away fans?
They're dead to me now. It's all about Brand. The Brand ultras were living
also,
yesterday.
Also, did you see my tweet? Like, why am I emotional about watching like three people who are stood outside the stadium, like jumping and hugging each other? It was just so wholesome. But they were, they were so loud. And
they had their signs.
Yeah.
All jumping up and down in their little woolly hats.
I love them. Also, they were booing a lot.
Caroline Graham Hansen,
which
in particular.
I loved.
Yeah.
Judas.
Yeah, well, also it's just great because Caroline Graham Hansen is such a, like, she's not that kind of player at all.
She's such a sweet
soul.
She's
so quiet. Yeah.
And a good performance to add to it as well. And yeah, the way that they celebrated their goal was...
She just looked so like...
She was so shocked.
As you would be, you just scored against like the best team in the world. She was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. But I think again, that's like, it's in those moments you're like, I totally get this thing of being like, oh, the quarterfinals are boring. Like, I'm like, but there's real teams who are getting to participate in that.
And there's real
moments.
Yeah. Like that like... is my favourite part of the quarterfinals so far. Like, that was really like, oh God, I love football. Football is so good. And it's that moment that someone who you don't expect to do anything particularly scores a goal. Also, it's a great finish.
Yeah.
It's not even
tight
like
angle.
Yeah, it's not even like it was like a tap in at the back post, which like, I mean, they all count, but like, yeah, that is a real tight angle.
I also feel... It's really hard to do it across two legs, but I also feel like when you're playing a team like Barcelona as well, where they are going to have so much of the ball, and if they do miss chances, you can actually kind of stay in games. And that's why I thought...
They did have so many chances.
They did have so many chances,
every time
like
I looked at the game last year,
It was very like
where
the Roma
like,
game.
You play this game again and Barcelona probably win by 3 or 4, and I'm sure they will at their Johan Cruyff arena, but yeah, still loads of fun though. Mm. And I think that's also I know what you're talking about, you know, the way obviously the ties are set up that the team who tops their group goes second. And that's because it is a benefit in some ways. But I think there's something nice about the fact that the smaller teams get the home game, because I feel like that allows you to be in the tie.
Competitive,
yeah, in a way that I think if they'd gone to Barcelona first, let's say it was randomised and they'd gone to Barcelona first, there's a potential that it could...
Yeah,
all
the only sad
over.
One was for Ajax. They really didn't really get that moment.
Well, yeah. But sorry. Sorry, but, yeah. Sorry, not sorry.
Can I just say, did you love the vibes in the arena because I think they like play such great tunes at halftime, and I was loving life when I was there.
It was just all of it. Obviously, you can drink in the stadium as well, which I love. Yeah, it was great vibes. I really enjoyed it. Also, we weren't in the horror. They hadn't opened the normal horrible away bit, so we actually had quite nice seats.
Oh, that's good.
Because they've got a big like plastic.
Oh, container
sitting right at the top.
You're like in a cage.
That's proper European football.
Yeah. That's like Italy, they do that.
No, we were almost, it was almost like, not like club seating, but it was a bit, it was really, the bar was like really nice as well. And then they had a little hot dog. They had a little hot dog stand. Wow.
They treated all 10,000 of you very
we were
nice.
Treated very well.
Was the hot dog stand there at request of
Emma Hayes?
Emma Gunnar Hayes.
I didn't ask.
Ajax hot dogs or Chelsea hot dogs, which were better?
Which one's better?
I didn't try a hot dog.
You're out there on the front lines reporting for us and you're not front lines a hot dog to report back.
I'm so sorry.
You're in battle.
Fired.
A team, though, I do think, quickly, have a good chance because PSG were classically PSG boring and bad. That Chiwenga goal was so bad. It was like watching football in slow motion. You know,
to be fair, it wasn't bad from PSG. It was bad from Hecken.
No, but it, like everything, it was almost like, is anyone going to do anything here? You know how we often watch games in 1.5? It was like they'd gone 0.5. I was like, why is this so
Are you sure
slow?
You hadn't just turned your
No, genuinely.
Stream. It was
kind of an embarrassing women's football moment. But I do think Hecken kind of have a chance maybe against PSG. I don't know. I'm feeling it.
I have just ended up hating Hecken because they...
Yeah, you are such a Hecken hater.
It's because they are just like fluking all of these... games like the group stage, they were so lucky to pick up the points they
Hecken
did
to get to the final and fluke a win against Chelsea.
Can you imagine how boiled Jesse's noggin would be? If
I'd
that
have
happened.
To quit. I'd
Ruby
have to quit
Grant
football.
Lifting the Champions League trophy in Jesse's face.
She won't be if she tries to make clearances like she did last night again.
Wow. Ooh, savage. Okay, that's enough Champions League chat. We'll obviously be talking about round two, the second legs, next week. So let's see how they all end up. But hey, it might be more competitive, but probably when push comes to shove, we're going to see the teams that are expected to go through. But it's not about the scorelines, guys. It's about the moments. It's about the memories.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
And it's about the journey.
The Ajax remontada would be very iconic if it happened.
Well, I mean, would you enjoy? I mean,
no,
like,
not as
not
as speaking as not a Chelsea fan.
Yeah, no, truly, it would be unreal.
I mean, I would no. I think I would be sad for you.
Thank you.
I think it would be great.
It would be.
Imagine him doing it at Stamford Bridge.
Oh, also, Twitter.
The head loss.
No, would, no, the Arsenal fans would be too happy about it, and that would wind me up.
You would go underground.
So I can't.
You would really disappear. All right, let's talk about the Olympic draw next. So we had the draw for the 2024 Olympic Games Women's Football Tournament in Gay Paris. Is anyone going in the end, by the way? I know people are looking at tickets. You are going?
Well, I have a load of tickets. Yeah, I absolutely haven't planned anything.
Well, who have you got tickets for? Have you checked?
No, actually, I haven't checked since the draw happened. Did they assign the game?
Well, they should have done, yeah. Did you get women's and men's football ones? Or?
No, I just got women's.
Interesting. I sort of just got spooked because I heard everything was really expensive. So I was like, I'm not
even
going
to... Yeah, when I looked, everything was really expensive.
Also, I've heard the Eurostars are wild.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. I actually also haven't asked my French family if I can come stay, which I should probably do like ASAP.
I think you need to explain who your French family are because that's so
Becky
funny.
Was adopted and she lived in France for many years.
I was an au pair when I was 18 and they never had an au pair after me. So I'm and they never had one before me. So I'm basically just their sixth child because they have five kids.
Whoa.
Because they're Catholic. I haven't told them I'm gay. They're the only people I haven't come out to.
They don't listen to Culture Press.
Gay, fake English daughter.
Adopted.
Yeah, but like when I was an au pair, I did find like books. They're very Catholic in their house. One which was titled in French, Don't Become Gay, You'll End Up Sad.
Which, like, and you were like, accurate.
True. So true.
So what's problematic about that?
I wrote the book.
Becky's memoir that she wrote while in Paris.
My journey to queerness and 50 milligrams of sertraline.
You know how like Ernest Hemingway spent some time in Paris like thinking about his feelings? That was Becky
that time,
writing sad books.
I can't find my email.
We'll come back to it. But while Becky fiddles around with that, let's go through the groups because Group A, which I really like, which is France, Colombia, Canada, New Zealand. Then we've got Group B, USA, a CAF side to be announced, to be playoffs are going
TBD.
On. TBD, that's what we're looking for. Germany, Australia, which I think people have assigned the group of death, but we were saying before the pod that it's not actually that group of deathy, but we'll come on to it in a minute. And then Group C, Spain, Japan. Throwback to the World Cup.
Fun.
Another I've got my Japan shirt.
Another CAF team and Brazil. Okay, so
that's fun. That's my favourite group.
That's your favourite group. So my favourite is Group A. I think we've got some fun teams, interesting narratives. You've got the gold medalists who have, you know, they sort of got that gold medal a little bit flukily. It was a massive moment and they haven't delivered really ever since. Group B with the US, massive, with Australia coming off the back of a big home World Cup and beating Team GB in the last Olympic Games and doing pretty well under Tony Gustafsson. That was his first like big tournament. And I think expectations will be high. And then Germany, who are a bit of a chaotic mess right now, and whoever the CAF side might be, we'll wait and see. So I feel like that's actually quite an easy group for the US.
I don't know though, because I did kind of think that, and I know I basically said that before we came on the pod, but then thinking about it, when you think about how the US have played recently, I'm like, are they significantly worse than Germany have been?
You see what Jesse's done there, is they've led you down a path and been like,
no,
before the pod,
been
like, I think this, and you've been like, yeah, and then been like, no.
No. I'm just reassessing.
I get where you're coming from, but I still do think that, especially in tournament football, with enough, like, we all know what will happen in the US group, right? They will have one dodgy game. There'll be a hysterical.
Against the CAF team.
There'll be a historical reaction.
It now.
Yeah, maybe they'll lose to Zambia. There'll be a historical.
It'll just be like a 1-1 draw or something.
Absolute hysterical reaction. And then they will go on to smash.
God, I can't wait for the hysterical reaction.
They'll go on to smash Germany and Australia. And they'll probably end up getting at least a silver. And everyone will be like, hey, remember that crazy. I just feel like it's inevitable. I think why this maybe feels different is because there's going to be this interesting transition and this pressure on Emma Hayes. Mm. And I think that throws up more question marks. Whereas Germany have almost been a bit all over the place now for a while. So it's like, is there strength in understanding that you're chaotic and you probably might not, you could not get out of the group.
They're all going to get out of the group though, aren't they?
True, because you could be third place best.
To eight teams, like, come on, if you don't get to the quarters.
I feel like it's almost easier to say which of the 12 teams won't get out of the group. Sorry, New Zealand, probably not going to happen for you. And then maybe one of the CAF teams, depending on. But it is hard, because it's really dependent on which, on like all the permutations within the group.
It's really hard for that CAF team that's been drawn into Group B with USA, Germany, Australia.
Yes.
That's tough.
Yeah, that feels like it could be really hard. But I agree with you. Group C, I think, is the most fun in terms of.
Oh, no, that was Becky's. Mine was Group A.
Oh, sorry.
Mine
I agree
was
with
France,
you.
Colombia.
Group C is the most fun, I think, in terms of like what individual games do I think will be exciting.
And I think people get very sort of dramatic maybe about this draw, but the Olympic Games tournament is always intense because there's only 12 teams. So every single group is always pretty tough because it's not like the World Cup, especially with it being expanded now, where you can kind of assume, or maybe, and we had so many surprises in the World Cup, but maybe there'll be, you know, winners there, whatever. But this is so, so tough. And that's why you do see teams sometimes bomb a little bit, because it's such a tight setup.
Yeah, it is funny though, because when I think back to our group at the last Olympics, that was a really random mix of teams. And I don't think our group was very hard, because we had Chile, Canada, and was Japan the fourth team?
Yeah. I literally could not tell you at all.
And we made it hard work.
We made it hard work, but I do think it's funny that I feel like there are more teams on the rise, whereas I feel like when the last Olympics, we at least ended up in a group. I know Canada obviously then went on to win, but I think at the time it was seen as a group where it was a lot of teams on the fall, like Chile had gone to that World Cup and then like they were also at the Olympics, but now like you literally don't talk about them at all ever. And like Japan are now really good, but at the time were also seen as being a bit like not very good. Yeah. So,
well, also it was a home tournament for them and it was a real disappointment. Mm. So I think there was that narrative as well.
It's
of,
funny
like,
how
the
quickly,
pressure.
I mean, quickly it's been 3 years, but it's funny how those things can change like in one cycle.
It feels like a lifetime. Those 3 years ago, it feels like a lifetime.
It's like only 3 years because of COVID, and it still feels like a million years ago.
Ellen White's hat trick for Team GB, and they still end up losing that game. Wow. Honestly, it feels like a fever dream.
My noggin is still boiled on behalf of Ellen White.
100%. I remember
that was like one of the great individual performances, like for a England/GB team.
It's also mad that that isn't on her England record because it's Team GB. Yeah. It's bizarre.
And Millie Bright should have known better.
Oh, don't. We don't want to go over it. And listen, we are going to do some proper Olympic stuff. So we're not going to go into it too much detail because that's going to come later down the line. But we will revisit. Before we wrap up today, fun little collab between League MX and NWSL. There's been a couple of these now, and the leagues have been growing closer and closer. Obviously, we know League MX is thriving right now in terms of its women's league, a lot of money pumped in from various sides. And in July, during the NWSL break, which will be happening during the Olympic Games, they've announced a really fun little tournament that is going to involve all the NWSL sides and some League MX teams. And it's going to be sort of broken up in a Conti Cup-y sort of style.
Oh, the Conti Cup of America.
The Conti Cup of America. Finally, we have
huge.
It. And so everything's sort of going to be regionalised. But it's really fun. And I think, I don't know, hopefully we'll see a bit more of a WSL influence and experiment with this. But I do think it's exciting to see the relationship building between the NWSL and League MX. And every year there's lots of teams. And even, you know, we saw it with Colombian sides pre-season with the NWSL. Like, to see these the NWSL build more relationships with leagues in South America, it's also massively, you know, developing the talent spotting and recruitment as well, which is then going to probably filter down even more into Europe. We saw Mia Fischel come over from Tigres to Chelsea, and she was probably one of the biggest maybe players to emerge from that league and then move into Europe. So very exciting.
Yeah, I think it's really fun. And obviously they've announced they're going to do like a CONCACAF type Champions League thing as well, right? So
It's all leaning towards the new Club World Cup that's on the horizon as well.
Yeah, and I do think it is really fun in terms of like just getting players the opportunity to play against different styles. And like the Champions League in Europe is obviously like the most fun every year, in my opinion, even though it causes the most heartbreak.
I don't know why. I was just like having a moment where I was like deep in the Champions League and being like, God, it's just crazy, isn't it, that we just like all these countries play against each other. We just get to play against each other.
We are very lucky.
Yeah. So, and I think it's really cool to be building that, because I think there's lots of teams who will learn a lot from playing each other. And yeah, I think obviously the NWSL always has it kind of tough in terms of the way their calendar runs, and the fact that you kind of have to take these breaks or players go away when there's international tournaments. Obviously, we had that with the World Cup last year. We're going to have it with the Olympics this year. And being able to use that time, I think, to do interesting and kind of experimental things is a really nice way to like make the most of it.
Especially because we've talked about how, unfortunately for the NWSL, is when the Olympics takes over, people don't pay any attention. Whereas now you're giving them a product to get invested in.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's just a really good opportunity to kind of make the most of what that time is there for. It will be interesting when, I don't know if we've really talked about this, but this other women's league that's being set up that's going to run on our calendar. It's going to be really interesting
USL.
To see, yeah, how that ends up.
So it's like
competing.
Kind of a similar kind of like second tier.
No, it's not a second
it's
tier.
It's been given tier one
it's
status.
It's going to be a new first tier. Totally separate from the NWSL.
New franchises. So USL is going to be new franchises. They've got top
That's
tier status. I mean, the good thing is,
how is that going to work?
The good thing is that it's providing, and this is how they've almost sort of pitched it, is it's providing a player pathway in North America that has been obviously blocked off because there's been a limited amount of top tier professional sides. And it's basically saying, hey, we've got another place for you. We've got another professional league that people can play in. But it's all well and good pitching that, but it's obviously very hard to then deliver on a big scale.
Also just really annoying. Just have a second tier and relegation. God, I just cannot.
American sports is very hard.
This
to
is
get
the thing. Yes, I can. I think like I really enjoyed this weekend's NWSL, but there is just like there's no jeopardy, so I just can't fully get behind it. It just feels like a friendly tournament. Like there's like what if you lose doesn't matter. So what's the point in it?
I mean, it doesn't matter because you then can't win the championship or get in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I agree.
Well, I guess what
relegation
would, be
would change it.
What would be interesting, though, about having this second separate league is what you're saying about opening up player pathway. That also has an interesting impact on the NWSL franchises because right now, if you're an NWSL franchise, yeah, you're probably going to be able to still attract like decent players and pay them lots of money, even if you're not very good. We've seen like the Orlando Pride, for example, historically aren't very good. They still manage to sign big players.
Marta is somehow still there.
When you add in then another number of teams, okay, it's not in a like lower division. There's still no risk of going down. But suddenly, if they have money and funding, there's a whole extra, they don't have to move country. They can stay in America and be paid and potentially just play in a totally different.
I don't know if, obviously it's like maybe too soon to say, but I don't know if it will just get viewed as like a second tier to the NWSL.
Yeah, I think
and I think maybe it will, rather than change. Well, I suppose this will change the NWSL, but I think it would have like a much bigger effect on like college football than the NWSL. But obviously, the NWSL draft from college, so
it's going to be it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see how. And that's one of almost the fascinating things about America is like we obviously love the way we do things because humans are just generally creatures of a habit, and so whatever you've grown up with, you always think is the best.
No, but. It is.
But it is the best, I agree. But I think what's really interesting, I guess, for women's sport, what the way sport in America is configured as, it does allow it, I think, to be a lot more imaginative in that sense. And I still think Outway's the best. But yes. I like that. It's an interesting thing to be able to watch. And you can see that, I guess, with these tournaments as well, like being able to figure out and try out things of being like, does this work? You know, like the CONCACAF tournament, I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what does it push different countries to do, for example. Like Canadian teams are going to go into it, but like the Canadian league is very different to like the NWSL. Like how does that work? Whereas I guess in Europe we're very much like, okay, we play the Champions League like this. Even the fact that they've switched it over and to the Swiss model, yes, from the men's and the women's, and you're just like, okay, well, like there's no opportunity to think about it maybe a little bit differently.
I also think in women's sport relegation should be talked about a little bit differently, because obviously if you get relegated from the championship and you're a professional footballer and suddenly you're not a professional footballer anymore, you're a semi-professional player, and that has like such big implications on people's lives. Whereas if you get, and I know that happens, you know, in men's football there is like a, when you drop out of the into non-league, but that's like much further down.
Well, you're also just being paid more money. Like if you're playing at the top of non-league or at the bottom of League Two, some like individual players still earn like, okay, not like Premier League money, but like
a lot of money.
I don't fully buy into the sort of Steve Parish argument, oh, if we got rid of relegation, people could have their investment guaranteed, because when it comes from someone who's running a Premier League club, I'm just like, come on, you're not short of money. Yeah. Like you're not short of being able to invest in your team. And maybe, to be fair to Crystal Palace, at least they're clearly doing something right now. But it is, I think it is true. There is obviously a kernel of truth to the fact that, yes, you are willing to put money in because it's not like it's going to disappear. I guess the question is like, well, how much does sort of being good affect your commercial opportunities still?
It's also like really interesting because in North American sports and football especially, but other sports are going through this right now, is there's been antitrust lawsuits about the way that the market is monopolized, and you know, promotion relegation is a big part of that. And there's been several legal cases against MLS and US soccer to say, by limiting this, you are sort of regulating the market in an unfair way. So it's, you know, those things don't disappear. There's other things, other legal lawsuits still up in the air as well. So maybe, you know, who knows what will happen. But Brooklyn USL franchise, I will be there.
I will be there.
So
fun.
I fully support that one. And I think it's fun. It's fun to have new teams. I think it will also serve local audiences a little bit more. And I think when you look at how non-league men's football is absolutely thriving right now, who's to say you couldn't have a similar culture for something that is still considered top tier, but obviously people probably won't be being paid as much. But I think it'll be interesting when it's like, how do you compete in a country that already the soccer culture and football culture is a little bit different? I think here you'd you probably, you know, it's more football. People love football, but I think it's hard in a sport that's still seen as having a growth moment.
But obviously then the difference in calendar will probably help with that as well. It basically means you get football all year round. Which...
the dream.
I'm there for.
Sign me up.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's enough for today, guys. Good to see you all.
I'm going to go try on some glasses now, guys.
Oh, send pics.
Love that for you.
Yeah.
Jessie, recovered from your trip, just about.
Yeah, I'm going to see Hadestown tonight, guys.
Oh, so fun. I really want to see that.
Christmas present from Emily Park Humphries. Oh.
Please give me your review.
What did Edward Park Humphries get you for Christmas?
What did Edward? I think he got me some books.
Boring.
No, I mean, that's my favourite present.
that's your brand.
Thanks, Emily, this is also a nice present.
I feel like Edward was fuming that he got, like, exposed on the pod last season for having bought you, what was it?
He once bought me a cryptic crossword book.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. The petrol station gift. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. Well, WSL back, obviously, this weekend. Daggers? You coming, Daggers? We're all going Daggers.
Are you?
Jesse's in the press box. I'm bringing my friend two Daggers. We're all going. Come Daggers.
On Sunday?
Yeah. 2:30. It's not that bad.
I'm working.
Don't go at 2:30. It's 4:30.
Sorry, it's 4:30. It's not 2:30. Whoops. 4:30.
Flo's taking a real... Becky's always late to the extreme. Yeah. Tala kickoff's 2 hours earlier.
Lewisham Borough game for non-league day on Saturday?
Actually, on Saturday, I'm playing in Gold Digger's final 11s game of the season.
Oh.
And there is a possibility, I think you'll find this shocking, Jesse, as a former Gold Digger's player, there's a possibility that we could win the league.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Wow, times have changed.
Times have changed. We used to lose every week.
I don't think I ever won an 11-a-side game with Gold Digger's.
Oh. It's not in our hands.
Maybe it's me.
It's not in our hands. We would have to have some other results go our way. But it is possible.
That's the real story of the weekend. Win.
Anyway, so I'm doing that on Saturday. And then obviously partying the day away afterwards. Kickoff is at 10. And then I'm working on Sunday. So the only football that I will be attending this weekend is Gold Diggers FC. And you can also come down and be a fan. Clapham Common, 10 a.m. kickoff. Come down.
I would if it wasn't for the Manchester Derby. Sorry.
Okay.
All right. See you all on Monday, listeners. Have a good one.